welcome to Short Science, your international era-spanning portal for all the very best science in brief. I'm Elizabeth Hawke.
And I'm Paula Ferracca. Today we're going to be looking at magic. Just what is magic? Is there any science involved? What is an illusion? How can we be so easily tricked?
So we will be answering those questions and more. Plus, we have Rosie Waldron and Polly Bennett live in our guest booth today.
And today, we'll be kicking off our Sounds of Science future with the very first offering from correspondent Ed Prosser.
Wow, it really is another jam-packed show. This is Short Science. So this is our pre-Halloween show and we're tackling magic and illusion in our capsules, and we're very lucky to have none other than Paola Ferracca, our Italian correspondent, sitting in the co-presenter's chair this week. So welcome, Paola.
Hello, everybody. Very happy to be here.
So you're normally based in Italy. What are you doing in the UK at the moment?
I came here to record my radio show that is called Revolver. It's a journalistic one.
So Revolver, that's all about, you know, what's happening in politics, culture.
Yeah, exactly.
Any science in there?
Sometimes there's you.
Sometimes there's me. Otherwise, they're sadly lacking in science. Now, tell us a bit about the radio station that Revolver broadcasts from.
Okay, it's Radiofonica. It is based, it's a university radio station like this one, and is based in Perugia. At the moment, they're broadcasting Short Science as well.
So we know they've got good taste, so Revolver must be a good show if they're broadcasting Short Science as well. It just goes without saying, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, I think so.
So now you may have noticed that Paola has a slight Italian accent on her. Now we're going to do our very best to beat some English into her today, but I think she's doing a fantastic job so far. So good luck with all the tricky words I've got planned for you to say later on in the show. Now, I guess we'd better introduce who we've got in our guest booth today. So, girls, hello.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Great, you're there. Always a sigh of relief when I hear you're there. So, now, let's start with Polly. Polly Bennett, tell us a bit about yourself.
A bit about me, okay. Something quite standard to begin with. I'm here at Imperial to do a Master's in Science Communication, but originally my background is in biology. And then something a bit more interesting, perhaps, about myself is that I'm a huge fan of fantasy and science fiction books, so the theme today is actually pretty relevant.
Well, we're trying not to hold it against you. Anyway, go on then. Something shocking that people would be surprised to know.
Shocking. I am an undefeated champion of Lord of the Rings Trivial Pursuit.
That is quite shocking, actually.
I've yet to find someone to
I'd go as far as to admit to having the DVDs, but that's, I'd have to draw the line there.
It's an excellent game, you should try it.
I'll have to look it up. Now, let's move on to Rosie Waldron. So, tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi there, I can't claim to be a champion at anything, I'm afraid. A bit less interesting, but start off with something boring again. I studied neuroscience, and now I'm doing psychom, like Polly. And I really, really like llamas. I like their little faces. I think it's like a dream to own a llama one day.
I don't know if that's your interesting fact or your shocking fact. I feel slightly interested and shocked.
Yeah, maybe.
So you want to live in the countryside then? You're not thinking of a town llama?
I don't know. Maybe you could have a... How much land does a llama need? I don't know. Maybe you could fit them into a little pocket in London.
I think they eat a lot, a bit like goats.
Yeah.
They eat anything and everything that's going. Go on then, and one more fact about you.
Okay, I don't know if this is that shocking, but it's quite relevant that I have a big phobia of masks, which coming up to Halloween is a little bit... It's not the best time of year for me.
I have to say, actually, I know what you mean. I think they're pretty freaky myself. And if I'm watching a film and, like, the baddie has a mask, I really don't want to watch the rest of the film.
No, I really hate it.
It's weird. Okay, well, girls, we're going to hear more from you later on in the show, but right now we better get back to today. So we are going to be talking all about magic. Now, next week we are going to be talking about synesthesia. Now, it sounds like a funny word, but it's the phenomenon where there is a crossover in the senses. So instead of just hearing a sound, some people can see the sound or even taste it as well. Now, no one really knows why this happens, but we will be looking at the latest theories.
So, what do you think? Do you experience synesthesia? Do you associate numbers or days of the week with colours or shapes? Do you think it's a real phenomenon? Are we all synesthetes to varying degrees?
Yes, so if there are any synesthetes out there, let us know how you experience it. And let us know what you think, even if you're not a synesthete. Call up our recording service, leave your message, and listen in next week to hear your voice on the show. It really is that simple. Now, the number that you need to call is +44 7401 856 681. So that's 07401 856681, or you can send in pre-recorded material to studio@shortscience.co.uk.
Well, we better get back to today's show now.
Indeed we had. Well, it's time now for the Short Science News in Brief.
Global warming may have a different impact than anticipated. The meteorological system of the northern and southern hemisphere may react differently to global warming, claims Professor Paul O'Gorman. In fact, the normal schedule of extratropical storm will be completely different. In the southern hemisphere, then there will be storms throughout the year, while in the northern hemisphere there will be more storms during the winter and fewer during the summertime. This change will affect the air we breathe. In the northern hemisphere, there will be few storms in the summertime, resulting in the lack of air circulation and the accumulation of pollution in the atmosphere.
Contraceptive gel on the cards. Scientists have been developing a contraceptive that is applied directly to the skin in the form of a gel. Now, it works in exactly the same way as the contraceptive pill and contains the same hormones, estrogen and progesterone. However, the gel is not associated with any of the negative effects of the pill, such as weight gain and acne. Now, in this initial study, the gel has proved very effective, with none of the participants falling pregnant. But more studies will be carried out to see if the gel has other additional benefits, such as being safe for breastfeeding mothers.
New frogs discovered. A surprising discovery has been made in Tanzania by the International Zoologist Research Group. The finding concerned three new frog species with remarkable characteristics. The eggs of these species do not release tadpoles, but fully form little frogs. The newborn frog has a small and strong beard and a flat muzzle, and has a skin that is completely covered by a strong, thick, granular tissue that secretes a toxic substance that is their secret weapon against predators.
Smoking increases dementia risk. Yet another story about the increased risk of dementia this week, and this time it is one we should all have guessed, really, smoking. So smoking two packs of cigarettes per day during the midlife period has been found to double your risk of developing Alzheimer's and vascular dementia. Now, this level of increased risk was only associated with the heavier smokers and those smoking during that midlife period, with no increased risk associated with smoking just half a pack per day. So stopping smoking before midlife was found to cancel out any of that increased risk completely.
A retrovirus that has lain dormant in chimpanzee and their ancestor for at least 1 million years is surrounding its secrets. A team of scientists has resurrected a key portion of the virus and determined how it infects cells. Ordinarily, endogenous virus, ancient viruses that were long ago engulfed into their host genome, are studying the basis of their DNA sequence alone. Increasingly, however, researchers are bringing such viruses back to life and putting them through the same laboratory tests that contemporary viruses are subject to. Mimicking such defenses could help to combat modern viruses such as HIV.
Fertility depends on blood group. Researchers have found that women with the blood group O were less fertile than those with other blood groups. They were found to have a chemical profile that is associated with a lower number of eggs in the ovaries. Now, no one can really explain this finding, and scientists are reiterating that the single biggest factor affecting fertility is age. But scientists will now follow a group of women with the O blood group to see if the evidence of having lower numbers of eggs is associated with more difficulty falling pregnant.
Climate change caused by black carbon, also known as soot, emitted during a decade of commercial space flight will be comparable to that from current global aviation, researchers estimate. The findings suggest that emissions from 1,000 private rocket launches a year will persist high in the stratosphere, potentially altering global atmospheric circulation and distribution of ozone. The simulation showed that the changes to Earth climate could increase polar surface temperature to 1 centigrade and reduce polar sea ice by 5 to 15%.
And finally today, paternal health neglected. Evidence is emerging that most doctors do not place as much importance on a woman's paternal medical history as their maternal. Now, this means that when it comes to assessing things like cancer risk, doctors are disregarding evidence of cancer in the father's side of the family, even though many cancers, such as breast cancer, can be equally inherited through the father's side of the family as through the mother's. This means that a major risk factor for cancer, that's family history, is being used in a highly inaccurate and biased fashion. So, girls, make sure you tell your doctor about any cancers or serious illnesses in your father's side of the family.
It's amazing that doctors can get things so wrong.
Well, a lot of medical practice evolves culturally, with doctors learning from other doctors and then changing their practice to fit in with their colleagues. Now, in that way, medical myths, misunderstandings, and mistaken oversights can be passed along and spread through medical practice. That's why it's important that these things are independently highlighted so that doctors can examine their practice and then take note of these sort of findings.
Well, that is for our news from today, sorry. But have you found anything interesting from years gone by?
Well, on this very day in 1780, a group of American scientists observed a solar eclipse.
What's remarkable about that? Surely people must have seen eclipses before that.
Well, yes, they had, but these were American scientists and they travelled to Maine to make their observations. And at that time, Maine was actually in the hands of the British and Britain and America were actively at war. But the British soldiers allowed the American scientists to land, make their observations and then leave again, all in the name of science.
Amazing. What else have you dug up?
Well, also on this very day in history, in 1859 this time, German physicist Gustav Kirchhoff invented the spectroscope. Now, this was a very important invention that's still used today.
Weird word. What does spectroscope do?
A spectroscope. Well, it allows you to analyse a sample of material to find out what chemicals it's made up of. And then you can tell what's in it. So, for example, in forensic science, if you have some sticky substance left at the scene of a crime, you can analyse it and see what chemicals are in that. And then you'd find out that actually it's ketchup, not blood. So it's a very useful technique.
Wow.
Now, lastly for today, another invention, and this time it was in 1938, so a bit more recent. The DuPont company announced they'd invented a new synthetic material called... Any ideas, Paola?
I was thinking about it all this morning. I thought everything, I don't have any clue. Please tell me.
Nylon. It was nylon they invented.
So anyway,
that concludes the news for today. If you have any questions or comments about any of our news, either from 2010 or from centuries past, then leave us a message on 07401 856 681 or get an email out to studio@shortscience.co.uk. Now, let's press on with this week's Capsule Science.
So this week we are talking about magic. So I've started off by asking Elizabeth to tell us just what is magic exactly.
Well, magic is one of those really interesting things that has come to mean quite a few different things. Now, we're going to be looking at some of those different meanings later on. We're going to leave illusions to one side because we're going to come on to that. But magic as a concept has been around for a really long time. And in a slightly similar way to religion, magic has been used to explain the inexplicable. Now, as humans, we're always looking for meaning and rationality in everything around us. And it's very scary for little human brains when we can't find that meaning. So in some cultures, religion has stepped in to provide the answer to the meaning of life and other such questions. And in other cultures, magic has played a part.
So, where does the word magic come from? And what is the literal meaning?
Well, the word magic derives from the Latin word magicus and the Greek adjective magikos, and both words were used in relation to priests. Now, that's ancient astrological priests, Zoroastrians, not the modern-day priests that we get in churches and how we think of priests today. And the word sorcery comes from the French word sorcery, which literally means to influence fate.
So it sounds like it is sort of about supernatural forces at work. Things that we can't see or explain, but which help us to explain things that happen to and around us.
Exactly. And over time, a bit like religion, magic has become steeped in ritual. Ritualistic language, ritualistic behaviour, and also ritualistic association. Now, there are two principles in magic, the principle of similarity and the principle of contagion.
What is the principle of similarity?
Well, the principle of similarity is the idea that if things always occur a certain way or in a certain order, it's because there is a link between the elements occurring, and a causative link can therefore be made. So, for example, a rooster always crows just before dawn. Now, we know that the rooster crows because dawn is about to occur, but in ancient times, the rooster crowing would have been thought to cause the dawn to occur. And that's the principle of similarity, a magical way of thinking.
And what about the principle of contagion?
Well, this is another type of magical thinking. Now, this time the idea is that if two separate objects are brought together, then they will continue to influence each other when they're apart. So, for example, many native cultures have rituals associated with growing crops. Now, the Agaruruna use Nantag stones to promote a good harvest. So the stones are rubbed against stem cuttings of the plants being cultivated, and then the stones themselves are planted in the field to promote good growth of the crop. So the stones become symbols of fertility through their contact with the fully grown plants, and they then pass that fertility on to the growing crops.
So really, magic is the broadest sense, is a way of thinking.
That's right, it's just a way of thinking. And that's how it would be described if magic were considered anthropologically. Now, as I said before, illusions and trickery are something a bit different, and we will come on to those next. But I really think we have to stop now, draw a line. Details of this show and various options for listening again or subscribing to our podcast can be found on our website at www.shortscience.co.uk. Now, you can post comments there on any of our show pages or on our news pages, so don't hold back, let us know exactly what you think. And if you're a Facebook type person, you can find the Short Science page on Facebook and give us a like. We like it when you like us, it's weird. We like having friends. So now it's time for this week's Capsule Medicine.
So now we are going to look at modern day examples of magic, illusion and trickery.
Yes, so I'm really going to focus on illusions now. So an illusion is basically a misinterpretation of something that is actually occurring. So it's different to a hallucination in which there's a perception of something occurring when in fact there's nothing happening at all. So a hallucination is a sensation without a stimulus, and an illusion is a sensation that's been mistaken but there is actually a stimulus there.
So, an illusion is an incorrect sensation produced by a stimulus.
Exactly, that's right. Now, as humans, because of the way that our brains work, we are quite vulnerable to illusions, and that can be exploited by magicians or illusionists to make us believe that we are seeing something magical happening.
So, are there any easy examples to demonstrate what an illusion is?
Well, the easiest example is to think about a mime artist. Now, the mime artist mimes reacting to a variety of different things, and we can imagine and anticipate those invisible objects because we recognise his reactions. So, for example, when the mime mimes going up and down stairs, we can visualise and imagine stairs because our brains recognise the action that the mime is acting, and they fill in the gap for us.
But isn't that just imagining rather than an illusion?
Well, imagining is the thin end of the wedge of illusions. Now, the more bona fide illusions are still based on imagination, it's just that we don't even realise that our brain is imagining anything. We've evolved to live in a really fast-paced world, and we make snap decisions that can save our lives, like hiding behind a bush when a lion is walking past, that kind of thing.
What have lions got to do with illusion?
Well, our need to avoid lions and the like has led our brains to process our visual, auditory and other sensory inputs very quickly. And often our brain does it so fast that it makes decisions about things before all the information is collected from the senses. So if our brain is told that a lion-shaped animal is coming towards us and it's lion-coloured, it might make the decision that it is, in fact, a lion, without waiting to see that it's actually just somebody in a lion costume. So our brain fills in missing bits of information to help us make quick decisions and stay safe.
So our brains can make mistakes.
Absolutely, and that is what illusions take advantage of. Now, we've all seen the Penrose stair illusion. Now, this is a drawing of a set of spiral stairs following a square pattern. But the way that the stairs have been drawn, even if you walked all the way around the square, you would never actually get any higher, no matter how many times you walked around them. The stairs are an impossible object, because how can you walk upstairs but get no higher? We know this, but we still see this shape as a set of stairs. Now, this is an optical illusion.
Not much good for radio, though. Optical illusion.
I know. So that's why I found a great audio illusion for you too. So this is called the Shepherd Scale, or in this example, the Shepherd Rosette Glissando. So let's listen to it and see what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. just a musical note getting lower and lower and lower, like an airplane crashing or something.
Well, actually, the pitch never changes, but we hear it as descending. It's a very clever trick using layered ascending and descending scales. Now, our brains, for some reason, prioritise interpretation of the descending scales, perhaps so that we'll get out of the way of any crashing planes, and we hear the sound as descending. But when you keep listening, you realise the sound never actually gets any lower. So let's listen to a bit more. So you see, no matter how long you listen, the sound doesn't actually change. So it's a really, really weird phenomenon. And that's the point of an illusion. It's to make you think one thing when really something else is happening.
Well, we better leave illusion there for the time being.
OK, well, if anybody has any questions about anything we've been talking about today, or we'd like you, or you want to tell us anything that you know that we haven't mentioned, send in your comments or thoughts and leave a message on our recording machine at 07401 856 681. And I'm sure you know our email address by now, studio@shortscience.co.uk. So now we are thinking here in the studio, I'm going to bring Polly and Rosie back in as well, about magicians. So we've talked a bit about magic, but what about magicians? Who are our modern day magicians? Who do we know about? So we see on TV and stuff like that. Rosie, what about you? Who have you seen recently?
I think probably Darren Brown is the one he's always on TV.
He is always on TV. Now, he's a very kind of funny, particular kind of psychological magic. And doesn't he always say that it's not really magic?
Yeah, he's always trying to give you, maybe not the science, but more the psychology behind everything that's going on and how he does it. But you still get tricked anyway.
Yeah, and I wonder if some of that stuff that he's giving us isn't actually the right answer. If he's misleading us still further by telling us how he's done it and that's not actually how he's done it.
God, that's so clever. He's such a clever one. He's such a trickster.
And what about David Blaine? Because he gets a lot of publicity and he does things that seem more like just endurance tests, don't they? Polly, what do you think about David Blaine?
Oh, he's not a real magician. He's just, I don't know, does he do it for money or just for showing off? Is he just that arrogant?
I think it might be just attention.
Because it's not even magic. What does he do? He just hangs upside down for 60 hours or something. But even then, in one of the ones he did like that, he came down for breaks to let the blood drain away from his head and
kind
to go to the toilet.
Kind of defeats the object, doesn't it?
Which does, yeah. I thought it was really stupid.
So, Paola, what about in Italy? I mean, is magic something that's believed in? Is it something that's used in popular entertainment? What's the sort of magic scene?
You know, magic is very important in Italy. There are many important towns like Turin and Perugia. They are thought to be magic places. In Turin, we say there is an important monument that we call the Door of the Hell. So they practice lots of magic stuff in there. In south of Italy, many people, they still think that magicians, they're like doctors. So they go to these people to let them, you know, for cure pain or stuff like that.
So it's a really big cultural thing in Italy then?
Yeah, they still believe that magic exists. It's that kind of science.
Fascinating stuff. Now, let's go to our recording service and email inbox and see what you listening at home have had to say this week.
You've got mail.
So, we've had another email from James F. Now, last week we answered his question about computer screens with the help of fantastic guest Thomas Welsh. Now, this week James has written in asking us to explain what happens when he presses send on his computer. Now, we've put the very best minds on the case, James, and we will be answering your question in next week's show. But there was something else that you asked that can't wait until next week. So, thinking about Halloween, James wants to know whether dressing all in black will make him look scarier than if he dresses as a skeleton. So, James, we're going to have a vote right now, live on air, and see what our guests think. Now, in the Short Science office, we reckon that a skeleton is probably the scariest office, so that outfit, so that will be my vote. But let's see what our guests think. So, let's start with Polly. What's scarier?
I think it depends what kind of entrance you make, really. I think if you were dressed all in black, you could just sort of come out of the shadows and scare all your friends.
Especially if you've got black face paint and if you've got a black hat and a big cape.
Yeah, and if your eyes are sort of wide open to get as much white as possible shining through, I think you could really freak out your friends. Whereas there might be lots of other people dressed as a skeleton.
Okay, so it sounds like Polly's going for dressed all in black. Yep. What about Rosie?
Well, because of my phobia of masks, and I think if you were wearing an all black mask, that would be a lot scarier than a skeleton mask.
Gosh, so two votes for all black. Okay, Paola.
Oh my God, this is a problem for myself because I always dress in black. It means am I scary?
She does always dress in black and she is pretty scary, I have to say. So maybe that's the answer. So what's your vote going to be, Paola?
Oh, I think I will dress up like a nice Barbie.
A Barbie?
Yeah.
So Paola thinks you should dress as a Barbie. I don't know whether you should take her advice, James. I think that is slightly strange. And given that she dresses all in black and is quite scary anyway, do we really think that we can trust her advice? I don't know. So, well, my vote would be for skeleton, but I've been outvoted here in the studio and our guests think that black would be pretty scary, James. So do let us know what you decide to do. Send us a picture if you like as well so we can see. Then we'll tell you just how scary you really were. So we just love getting emails from anyone who has been listening to the show. So keep them coming in. So,
now on the subject of magic, we have had a few suggestions of other uses of word magic that are very pertinent to science.
Yep, so the word magic in most people's minds conjures up this kind of tricks and illusions and things, but in science it's actually applied to some very proper meanings. So, in nuclear physics there is something called a magic number.
Different to in chemistry.
Yes, so we'll come back to chemistry in a minute. In nuclear physics, a magic number is a number of nucleons, that's either protons or neutrons, that are arranged in a complete shell within the atomic nucleus.
Does the shell give the atoms special powers?
Well, yes. So atomic nuclei with a magic number of nucleons, and the numbers we're talking about here that are classed as magic are 2, 8, 20, 28, 50, 82 and 126, for example. Atomic nuclei that have those numbers of nucleons have a higher average binding energy than one would expect and are therefore more stable against nuclear decay.
Wow. Okay, well, you said that there were also magic numbers in chemistry. So how are they differ?
Well, in chemistry, a magic number is used to describe the numbers of atoms in a gas that is condensing into clusters of atoms.
So the numbers of atoms in this cluster is consistent?
Well, no. There's a variation in the numbers between a few atoms and many hundreds of atoms. But if you measure all these clusters, there tends to be two peak numbers of atoms that occur, one at the lower end of the scale and one at the upper end. And these two figures are then called magic numbers.
Not sure I understand at all.
No, neither do I. But we've done our very best here to represent what you sent in. So now this is what happens if you just send in an email saying stuff about magic numbers in chemistry and physics. I'm sure there are people out there that actually could explain it better than us. So don't just send us an email. Call our recording service and tell us. Because there's more expertise out there than just us. I don't think you could even call what we have expertise. And we love playing out your brilliant explanations.
Okay, now it is really exciting time here in the studio. We are about to play out our very first feature in the Sounds of Science series.
That's right. The brainchild of Ed Prosser will be hearing about different science-type sounds over the coming weeks. So here is Ed talking about how scientists at the Large Hadron Collider are creating sounds out of their data.
Welcome to the Sounds of Science.
Hello, I'm Ed Prosser, and welcome to the Sounds of Science. This week, we take a listen to the subatomic soundscapes of the Large Hadron Collider, made possible through the work of the LHC Sound Project.
The LHC Sound Project was established in January of this year and receives funding from the Science and Technology Facilities Council. The project is a growing collaboration of particle physicists, musicians and artists who work together to produce sounds and even music from the data collected by the ATLAS experiment. ATLAS is of course one of the detectors in the LHC, which is involved in the hunt for the Higgs boson, aka the God particle. So, let's take a closer listen to some of the sounds that the project has been producing. This is the simulated sound of what an emerging and decaying Higgs boson may sound like. These sounds are produced from data taken from the detector's calorimeter, a device used to measure energy. The device is made up from seven concentric layers, and each layer is represented by a note. The pitch of these notes is determined by the amount of energy deposited in each layer. Notes are then played in sequence according to their distance from the interaction point at the heart of the detector. Here we are hearing exactly the same event, except the data has been used to distort an existing sound, that of running water. In this sample, we are hearing what the harmonic signature of the Higgs boson may sound like. So, how exactly are these sounds produced? Well, they're produced through a process known as sonification. This is the process in which data is turned into sounds, while still retaining the original information in this data. A simple example of this would be a car parking sensor, which conveys spatial information as sound. Oh dear. The LHC Sound Project hopes to attract people to the Large Hadron Collider experiments in a way that is novel, exciting, and accessible. The project also hopes to enhance communication between scientists and artists by providing composers with LHC data. Finally, the project is looking at ways in which particle physicists can use sound as an analytical tool, and is exploring ways in which to do this. To find out more information and to check out a full library of LHC sounds, visit the project's website on lhcsound.help.ucl.ac.uk. This has been The Sounds of Science, and I leave you with the sounds of a decaying Higgs boson. Thanks for listening. Bye.
So that was fantastic, Ed. Thanks ever so much for getting that together and sending it in for us. And I have to say, I cannot wait to hear what you're going to do next. So that was Ed Prosser reporting on sonification at the Large Hadron Collider. Well, it's time now for our quiz, so I'm going to hand over. Now, this week, what's going to happen is that Rosie and Polly are going to quiz me and Paula to see just how clever we are about magic and stuff, I guess. So, girls, are you ready? I'm going to hand over to you now with your questions.
Yeah, okay. We're ready.
Okay, just go then.
Okay, question number one. What feat of engineering was responsible for the seeming disappearance of victims in the Jonathan Creek episode Satan's Chimney?
That's a silly question, if I may say so. But how am I supposed to know that?
It does actually involve magic and science, so it is relevant, at least.
Relevant, but yeah, it's supposed to be questions I can answer.
Do you not remember that episode is about Jonathan Creek and his, whatever her name is, I can't remember which one it is now, his sidekick. They go to Scotland to a castle, and there's this sort of tower, and there's a big hole in it, and if you go down into the sort of chimney bit, people end up disappearing.
I have no idea, Paula. You in your vast knowledge of Jonathan Creek. No, surprisingly, neither of us know the answer to that question. You're going to have to tell us.
You'd be more Jonathan Creek fans. Well, it's actually just an extra floor that comes down on chains, and that ends up crushing people to death. Okay. But it's very simple, trick of engineering.
Okay, next question.
Okay, I'm going to give you the next question, and it's a little bit easier, I have to say.
Thank goodness for that.
And it's multiple choice, which is always
brilliant.
Nice. Which bridge did Franz Harari make disappear? Was it A, Tower Bridge, B, Sydney Harbour Bridge, or C, Golden Gate Bridge?
I don't know.
Tower Bridge, Sydney Harbour Bridge, or the Golden Gate Bridge? I've heard of this, and I don't know. I don't think it was in London. Well, it probably was, but I don't think it was. I think it might be the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Any idea, Paula?
I would say Golden Gate Bridge.
Okay, you got one vote for Sydney Harbour and one for Golden Gate. What's the answer?
Oh, well, you're both wrong.
Oh.
It's Tower Bridge. Yeah,
what's
it happened
Tower
right
Bridge?
In London.
You think we'd hear about things like that.
I know.
How long ago was it?
I think they did it fairly... I think it was a couple of years ago. They redid it on a TV show.
Well, I must have been
ago,
out.
So. You're just too busy.
Yeah, that's it. So many important things to be doing. Okay, next question. We're not doing very well here.
This one's also very silly, okay. But it's multiple choice again, so you have a chance of actually getting it right. So in Harry Potter, what medical condition is treated with the juice from magical mandrake plants? Is it A, alcohol poisoning from too much butter beer? B, is it being cursed, or is it being petrified by a basilisk?
I'm going to go for A.
No, I wanted that.
We're both going for A.
Oh, for the alcohol poisoning?
Yeah.
No, unfortunately not. There's not much alcohol poisoning in Harry Potter. It's actually being petrified by a basilisk. It's from the second Harry Potter book.
Okay, I have to admit, I haven't read any Harry Potter books.
Me too.
I'm very anti-Harry Potter, in fact.
Oh, that's what you would have done in preparation for the show, you see.
No, I was busy reading about theories of similarity and contagion. So, no, I didn't get time to start on Harry Potter. Okay, one more question then.
Okay, so the last question is a little bit scientific as well.
Oh, cool.
Great. And it is, what did Georgia Wonder use to seemingly resist the strength of the biggest men in the audience? And it's A, super glue, B, leverage, and C, magnetism.
I think it might be leverage. What do you think?
Let's say C, just to give another answer.
So leverage or magnetism is our vote.
Yes, you're right. It was leverage.
Yeah,
so she held like the broomstick in a certain way so that she could keep it in the position and the strong men couldn't get it off her. So.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much, girls, for quizzing us today. I declare myself the winner, as I got one right. It's always the best position to be in, and every good guest knows that I should be declared the winner, so that's all good. So that's about all we've got time for today. Now, don't forget to call in to +447401856681 with all your thoughts on synesthesia for next week's show. Now, also keep your plant-related questions coming in for horticulturalist Austin Zingle, who will be on hand in the coming weeks to answer them for you.
Or email in any question, museum links or material to studio@shorescience.co.uk.
That's right. And check out our website for all the details about how to get in touch. So thank you very much for listening. This has been Short Science. Thanks to our Sounds of Science creator, Ed Prosser, and to James F. for his questions. Our studio guests today were Polly Bennett and Rosie Waldron. Their presenters were Paola Ferreca and myself, Elizabeth Hawke. We took care of our own production, and the theme tune was written and produced by Don Gould of Music by Design.
Thanks very much for listening, and join us next week for another episode of Short Science.
Radiofonica.com. Do what they told you. Now you do what they told ya. 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 And 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 now you do what they told ya. Born to die, or justified. For wearing the badge, yeah, you're chosen white. You're justified. Born to die, for wearing the badge, yeah, you're chosen white. Born to die, or justified. For wearing the badge, yeah, you're chosen white. You're justified. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Killing in the name of. Now you do what they told ya. 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 You're under control. Now you do what they told ya. You're under control. Now you do what they told ya. You're under control. And now you do what they told ya. Now you're under control. And now you do what they told ya. Now you're under control. And now you do what they told ya. You're under control. And now you do what they told ya. You're under control. And now you do what they told ya. Don't you die? Justified, but wearing the badge, yeah, you're chosen white. You're justified, don't you die. But wearing the badge, yeah, you're chosen white. Don't you die, I'm justified. But wearing the badge, yeah, you're chosen white. You're justified, don't you die. But wearing the badge, yeah, you're chosen white. Come on.
Dalle 19 alle 23 alla Tana dell'Orso, via Ulisse Rocchi 32, a 150 metri da Piazza Grimana. Drink e buffet 5 euro. DJ set e videoproiezioni. Non perdetelo.
Ciao Florenzo! Ti vedo raggiante questa mattina, che è successo?
Già, prima di uscire di casa ho ascoltato Radio Visioni, il programma sul cinema, tutto da ascoltare.
Ah sì, su www.radiofonica.com, la web radio con molti programmi di spessore culturale tra l'altro.
Ma sì, c'è pure Universo Parallelo, un nuovo programma, tutto di cultura.